Welcome to Bailing, Scanning and Barbecue. My name is Lawson Watt and I'm a former hunting and fishing guide. Join me on the live stream and podcast every Thursday night. I interview guests from all over Australia and the world. Join me on my YouTube channel as I bring you highs and lows of the adventures I do with my mates and myself. So don't forget to check it out and subscribe. Thanks, guys. G'day, welcome to another episode of the BSB podcast. Got a cracker for you tonight. I've got Rob Lambert from Flint's Creek Pointers up in Victoria somewhere. We're going to get into that a bit later, but I've got to do some bit of homework before I get into it. So quickly, before I introduce Rob, I just want to mention a few things. Deer Expo this weekend. If you're a deer hunter or want to be like me, head down. I believe there's tickets for sale still. And I believe it's going to be huge this year. So head down to Deer Expo. It's in Victoria, I think Melbourne. Don't quote me. I don't know exactly the spot. But, find out the details on, Deer ADA pages. So make sure you check that out. That'll be something worth looking at if you're a deer hunter. Even a hunter, it'd be good to go down there and just get a bit of knowledge and a bit of know-how. Another thing I want to point out before I get into it is the community, hunting community. So we've got some cracking podcasts coming on lately. So we've got The Hunting Connection by Zach Williams, Send It Mate podcast, and Endless Pursuit. Guys, if you're not listening to these, get onto them. Listen to these awesome, there's a couple of them, a bunch of blokes, and a couple of them just Zach by himself. Check them out because they are really good listens. And I believe the Endless Pursuits just got over 125,000. So congratulations to them. They are hitting it off. They're doing so well. They're getting some really big names. Send It Mates podcast, I think they have a little break at the moment. So hopefully they're all okay. And Zach's just pumping them out when he can. And he is doing well as always. So make sure you check out those podcasts, guys. It's really important to support the guys that you can. Another one I'll talk about is for our hunting communities, hunting clubs. Now, if you don't have a reason to hunt, hunting clubs can be quite beneficial. I know the club I'm a part of has, and I'm going to try and get Chris on down the track, can actually give you reasons to hunt, give you insurance, and there's lots of benefits to it, plus prizes and giveaways. So it'd be good if you... there's also different tiers of what you can do and paying wise. So if you are a hunter and you kind of want to start meeting new people, and for me as well, that's the reason why I've done this is to meet new people, to get to know someone and, hopefully they're going to book hunts and you can go with them, get your R license, do all that kind of stuff. So, if you are a hunter and struggling to get onto to private land, hunting clubs clubs like ADA will help you out. Last little bit before I get into talking to Rob is I'm starting up a Patreon. I've been doing this for about 4.5, nearly 5 years, and I have not asked for a cent or a dime. I did some merchandise. Wasn't fantastic, the merchandise. I got rid of it all, which was good. People do ask me for it, but I'm not going to get it again. Maybe down the track. I just at the moment, I'm not interested in it. But I am interested in Patreon and making it basically a bit of a community slash, hunting page, basically. So that would involve giveaways slash, when I say giveaways, it'll be giveaways as in hunting guides. I've got a few people in mind. And they've offered to help is, go up and hunt with them with guided scenarios and also coming hunting with me. Also prizes, shirts, gear, lots of stuff. So these brands you see around me, we're all going to help out and we're all going to get involved and we're going to start, doing some giveaways. So I'm going to make it worthwhile if you're on Patreon, I don't ask for anything and it's just something that I believe that, okay, I'm going to keep doing this. I need a little bit of help. So I've got grand plans and schemes and all that kind of ideas, but I need your help to get me there. So like I said, I haven't asked for anything before, but Patreon, I'll put in the details below. I'll make it as cheap as possible just so, another way that you and I can go hunting. That's, you know, I'll do prizes and all that like that. All right, so I have Rod Lamburn from Flynn's Creek Pointers. So I have only met Rob through Instagram. We've talked on there a little bit, and I was surprised. I put up a post letting people know it's happening, and I got a huge, huge outcome with people saying, awesome, very excited. Got some ripping questions from people on Instagram. So I'm going to bring him in. And how are you, mate? How are you going?
Lawson, how are you, buddy?
Good, mate. Fighting sickness, but we'll harden up and we'll keep going on. So
yeah, right, mate. Sleep when you're dead, eh?
That's it. That's it. Yeah. No, mama didn't make no softy. So, mate, tell us where you're from. Don't obviously give us the exact location, but give us a general idea of whereabouts you are.
Pretty obvious. Oh, God's country, Flynn's Creek here in Victoria. Not far out of Traralgon. So, yeah, lovely little spot. Loz and I got the two little girls there on the farm. So, yeah, good spot.
How many acres you got?
We're just on 70 here, run a few beefies, and then I work in the mine. Loz is a nurse, so keeps us busy enough, and
Mate, I have to admit, we've had some cracking walls on the podcast, but I think yours might take the cake. That's the best set of wall, I think.
Yeah. There's still a couple of spots there. We'll fit one bigger one or a couple of bigger ones on there. So. Yeah, let the hunt continue.
that's an awesome wall, mate. Congratulations. So, mate, we'll get straight into it. I've already wasted 6 minutes of people's time, so I'll get in straight to it. Mate, how'd you get into hunting? What made that came all about?
Sort of born into it, I guess. The old boy's just mad on it, loves it. He's done it as long as I can remember. Must have been 3 or 4 years old, and I was hiding in the backseat of his 4Runner or Nissan or Datsun or whatever he might have had back then, you know, when he'd leave without me, and he'd get 2 or 3 blocks around the corner from home, and I'd jump out and scare the shit out of him trying to go with him. But yeah, it worked a few times. A couple of times he turned me ass and dropped me home again. But once we're old enough, he'd start taking my brother and I, even my little sister at times. But yeah, when we got to sort of that 12, 13 year old mark, we'd, you know, walking behind Dad in the scrub with 1 or 2 pointer dogs and fighting over who was going to be in front, just in case, you know, a shot presented itself where we could actually have a go. And yeah, the addiction started from there. So,
yeah. Well, we'll get into the bit about the pointers in a minute. That's because to me, I've got no idea, and I'll be very open and honest to everyone. I have no idea about gun dogs and all that. If you haven't seen Rob's Instagram page, Flynn's Creek's Pointers, it's pretty fascinating. And I love dogs. So I've got 2 coming on Saturday, so I'm pretty excited about that. To me, it's a whole new thing, hunting with gun dogs. I've never done it, and I'd love to see it. So, mate, did your old boy have pointers in back then, or was it just
he has thing? Mate, yeah my first one actually come from he had this ripper dog, Duke. He was a brown dog. I had a couple of brown dogs when I was a young fella, but he was an absolute perler as far as sort of indicating and, you know, wind scenting, following up. He was primarily probably the best dog Dad's had, I'd say. He's had 3 or 4 since. Pretty good dogs. The one he's got now, he's getting on a bit, but old Jack, yeah, he's still got one. He's up Corryong way at the moment with one of them. Probably be hunting tomorrow morning, tomorrow arvo. But yeah, he had one called Duke that we put over a gentleman's dog by the name of Terry McDonald. He's a bit of a legendary Samba hunter from up Dargo way initially. He had a beautiful dog called Spot. Duke went over her, and that's where my first dog come from. Seth, I got pick of the litter, and a few others went around the traps. I know Matty Beath ended up with a good one. And another gent by the name of William Barry. Bill Barry is probably better known as. He had one called Snow, and they all turned out to be phenomenal deer dogs. So, yeah, sort of went from there.
All right. Well, did you have any mentors, mate, with the whole starting out, like getting into – because obviously dealing with dogs is quite difficult. I've had dogs in my life, and it can be quite frustrating at times, but did you have someone to give you, you know, a key mentor basically helping you in that aspect?
I guess I put a lot of that down to the old boy. I don't want to be pumping his tires up just in case he's listening, but I guess I was lucky in the sense that I grew up with them in the backyard, going out at every opportunity and just seeing firsthand how it was done. And it just grew from there. My brother more so went into more of the hound sort of side of things and stalking, whereas I always had pointers, whether it be I spent 3 years up at Northern Territory. We took four up there and hunted pigs. Blokes got all mad when we got there with them and started hunting them. But, you know, weekend after weekend, we're still pulling pretty good numbers. We flew a big big hairy lugger up there, and he sort of taught the two male pointers what to do. And from there, we just, went on, started catching a few pigs, and, it worked out well. So, but then coming back from there, and we sort of got back into the Sambar again as soon as we got home, and, just changed the dogs up, mixed a few different lines through the mix, and, went really well.
Do you catch many pigs with them, mate? And how do they lugging, or are they baling, or what's the go?
Yeah, on? The ones that we had up there at the time, they were going really well. They were lugging. They were more ground finders than anything. We caught the odd one off the back of the ute once we flew the hairy dog up. He was a pretty handy ute finder. So we took I think his name was Maverick and Ash, a couple that we had at the time with Raymond Alexander's dog. We took them up there and caught a few bits and pieces here and there. And when we got the hairy dog there, they sort of learnt quite well off him, but they were probably a lot better on the ground as opposed to you finding like the big fella. But they sort of picked it up real quick. So.
Oh, lovely. That's I didn't realise you went to the NT. That would have been a bit of experience for the heat change. It would have been gone.
Mate, miss it every day, especially this time of year.
Nothing better than NT. Were you in Darwin, mate?
Palmerston, just out Coolalinga I was. So not far. Yeah.
Obviously for work, I take it.
So. Yeah, it was at the time. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. What do you do for work now, mate?
Still much the same. Mine operator in the local mine just up the road here. Coal and, make electricity, but for now.
Fair enough. So you got on the pointers through your dad, mate. Why pointers? Why I can't say it at the moment. GPSs, but it's not GPSs, it's GSPs. So.
Close. Yeah, the old GSPs. I don't know, to be honest. I sort of always had a soft spot for Vizslas as well, all them sort of smoother coat, slim line, fast-looking dogs. But, I can't remember him ever having anything but, to be honest. But, he had three or four by the time I was 18. I got my first one when I was 12 or 13, so they're always in and out of the yard, you know. But, he's still always had German Shorthair pointers to the date, but I guess that's why I'm so biased. I've always been the same, but, yeah.
How do you find the maturity level on them? I had a hairy wide German white hair pointer, and I've also had a Weimaraner. And some days I was ready to leave them in a paddock because I just couldn't stand them. How do you find the maturity?
Look, it can all come down to the dog, I suppose. The genetics, age, age the dogs are joined. Like we've just had Cinder, Sooty's just gone over Cinder for her last litter, and these pups would have to be the maturest litter of pups we've had. I think just given the mum is nearing six and the dad's sort of five, they might play a big part as well. Could be the weather, could be because they're too cold to play up, I don't know. But yeah, I think definitely comes down to the dogs, to the genetics, and also very much a discipline as well. So we've had some very naughty dogs from some litters, and we've had some very well behaved ones from the same litter as well. So
I find it fascinating. I've always had a thing for pointers. I've always loved the look of them, especially the Hungarian Vizslas, and I always will love the Weimaraner. I just don't think I could ever own one again due to my bad experience. Poor old Chloe, she was just crazy. So she's still going, but just not for me. So anyway. I was gonna say, do they catch pig? But you've already answered that one. So mate, give us the rundown. So I've never hunted with the pointers in Sambar hunting kind of way. Are they balers? I don't understand. I honestly don't understand. So can you just give us a rundown on how it all works? Because most of my viewers are Queenslanders. So can you give us a bit of a rundown on what you do?
Ideally, a good pointer would bale, but that's a bit of a grey area, a bit of red tape. We're not allowed to use German Shorthair pointers as balers on deer. They're primarily a gun dog and indicating ambush style follow up kind of dog. So we try to use them within them parameters. Doesn't always go according to plan, but we basically hunt them close. We tend to hunt a lot of thicker country. So they will be within a stone's throw of us majority of the time. We run Garmin Alpha 200 eye trackers, which the TT15 collars have a, what is it, like a beep and a tone, and then also a vibrate and shock. So you can basically work on a 1-2-3 formula. The way I try to explain it to people is the easiest. Like 1-2-3 with kids, when you've got a naughty kid, you'll tell them 1-2-3 kind of thing, you're in try. Yep. We set up the trackers very similar, with a beep first or a vibrate generally first, just to stop the dog if he's going too forward, like cresting a hill or nearing the top of a thick gully, or if he's pushing too hard on a hot scent. But just to aid the dog to stop initially, then recall with a beep, like a tone, and the shock, which you'll find once you've set the 1-2-3 up properly, you'll barely need to use it, is to stop that dog, to recall the dog right back to you so he's not pushing too hard, too forward, and essentially scaring the game before you're in the position for a shot, if it does break cover or get up out of its bed, or before you are, you know, able to see what he is pointing or looking at. So yeah, a little bit to it, sounds probably a lot more technical than it is, but once you get them going, it's like having a remote control dog. It's fantastic. So
okay, so I've watched Tony Gillan's his channel, and I've looked at your pictures quite closely. So the dogs are about, you know, 20, 30 meters in front of you, and basically when they point, something's, you know, it's going to be on in a second.
Exactly, yeah. Working very similar to Tony's. He's got a bloody ripper dog in Rem. She's beautiful. Yeah. I haven't been fortunate enough to hunt with Tony yet. We keep talking about this year, but, you know, everyone gets busy, and probably me more so. I've got to get my act into gear and get up there when he's there. He's always up there, but yeah, they're very similar. They we try and hunt them within that sort of 20, 30, 40 meters. A lot of that country we're hunting up north, it's been burnt, you know, 2-3 years prior. It's very thick, you know, you're sort of pushing through a lot of it to get to that good spot that, you know, coming into that country where the dog might be able to work, where you can get him into a spot where he might get one out of bed at midday, or, you know, pop one up out of the head of a gully, or, you know, the wire of where two creeks are coming down a hill or something. But yeah, if you can get them going and stay close to them, is I think that's key. Yeah, if you're letting them work too forward, the deer are just going to break cover, and you're not even going to see what they're doing. So
yeah, that's fascinating. That's just so cool. I love watching Tony's channel, with watching Rem and how she'll pull up, and there's a couple of videos there where she pulls up, the deer's only about what, 20 meters in front of her, and bang, it's all over so quickly. And you know,
He does so well to put it all on film too. It's a lot harder than it looks. So he does fantastic, Tony does. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's fascinating, and you know, I love it. And I just love the, I love the color of your dogs. I love the look of them. They just look so they look like beasts, to be honest. They look so cool.
They probably eat better than me, the buggers. They go well, but
so they're obviously catching your pigs as well. That's awesome. So
yeah, well, these black ones, I haven't done a whole lot with them. That pig you're just saying there, that was a bit of a buy shot in the Vic High Country. I always said if I come across a good one there, it'll be going on the wall. That pig was actually had eaten 5 dead stag carcasses in that particular area. So I knew he was there. I actually lost my knife sheath at one of the carcasses, and going back about 3 months later to pick it up when we hunted the area again, the only thing I can put it down to was the pig, that pig maybe has eaten that knife sheath. So never got it back. Had still got the knife, but he must have upended an area of 4 or 5, you know, 6 football ovals within that area. And I've since taken that pig, and then after going back, the area's like getting back to really good pasture and stuff now. So goes to show how much trouble one pig, or potentially one pig, can do. So
Do you get many pigs your way, mate?
Not really. Nah, that was bit of a rare one, but they are becoming more and more common sort of up in that eastern sort of country there as well. So we sort of wound it back a little bit from hunting that area. It was starting to get a little bit hot, a lot of pressure out of tropicolors and stuff like that. So yeah, not to say the pigs aren't back in there too.
Yeah, no, well, Tony did say there wasn't a huge amount of pigs going through there.
Nah.
What's your thoughts on the aerial shooting, mate? You a fan of that, or yeah?
I get it. It's got to be done. I understand they want to bring the numbers down. I don't get involved in the political side of a lot of it. But, you know, that being said, there's a lot of other ways, a lot of avenue, other avenues they can look at it as well. Like if they're fair income, they'd probably open it up to their hound hunters, you know, open up a lot more country for the stalkers as well. You know, just we all pay game licenses down here with the GMA, pay for, I think it's 40 to 80 odd bucks a year to be able to go and hunt deer in a lot of these areas that they're, you know, culling them with choppers, and even a lot of the areas they aren't supposed to be in with the choppers. I have single-handedly seen them flushing them out of the back of fringe country till they get them across the track where they're legal to shoot and then into them. So, yeah, it's a bit hard to see, but there's still plenty for everyone. But, yeah, that's about it.
Mate, give us a bit of a rundown on a Samba deer. So, for myself, a Queenslander, we only really get chittle, small amount of fallow. There's not a huge amount, rooster and reds. But I've talked to quite a few people about Samba. How much tougher they are. They're obviously, every video I've seen, everyone's got a 300 Win Mag or bigger. The bazookas are coming out. a Samba, are they that tough to get hold of? Are they that tough to shoot? Is it all true?
They are a very tough critter, yeah. I've hunted reds in New Zealand, the odd fellow here and there. In comparison, the closest sort of size animal I've probably shot would be a red. Haven't got nothing on the Samba, yeah. They can be quite a big critter. Yeah, it'd be nothing to get one sort of, you know, 400, that 450 kilo mark. When you're by yourself in some of that steep country in the, you know, right up in that steep stuff, trying to roll them over when you're trying to work them yourselves to cape or to get back straps or eye fillets or legs off. Like you soon know about it once you've been dealing with one of them for 45 minutes to sort of dissect it and get what you can in the pack and bits and pieces. But that being said, I've seen some pretty big reds as well, but I just don't think they quite have the strength or the determination or stamina when they're shot to get away. I've seen some Samba go quite away with, you know, a good entry hole like in near the engine bay, like, which you would think would only go, you know, 100, 200 metres tops. I've had dogs on them that have gone, you know, K and a half, 2 Ks every day of the week. So, yeah, they're a very strong animal.
Can the dogs only scent Samba deer, mate, or they can hunt other deer as well?
I've had dogs with me on fallow as well. They probably don't necessarily hunt them. They do work the scent. You know, they will follow a ground trail. They will work, you know, point on sight and smell, like, you know, a rut and fallow stag, the noise they're going to make as well. The dog soon turns on and knows what's up and what we're doing. But, yeah, they're basically just Samba stags. Like, I've walked past bedded does with Clinker or Sooty and they've jumped up in front of me and taken off, and the dog sort of looked at me funny and, you know, I'm sort of as if to say to him, where were you on that one? But we've sort of got them to the point now where we wean them off does. We don't really hunt does. We only hunt stags. It sort of goes back to that ambush style, close-knit hunting. They're only to sort of be there with us as to sort of let us be a bit more choosy in what we are shooting. Like, say we don't want to come across a smaller sort of critter when we're 17 Ks in the bush and shoot it there and the hunt's over, or, you know, you're trying to fit what you can in the pack and then on you go to the next one. But a little bit different to hound hunting in that aspect. We're sort of only hunting sort of bigger animals, especially when you're pushing into that back country. And, yeah, that's sort of the key to having them close and, yeah, being able to see what you're shooting, I suppose.
Okay. With you're obviously, when you say hound hunting, you're talking about the beagles and the – is it just beagles?
Yeah, beagles. Yeah, you get a few different mixes in through there nowadays. There's some boys out there, you know, not far from here that are doing a hell of a job of it. I get invited to quite a few. I really need to pull my finger out and start getting up with them. There's, you know, likes of the Stoddy boys and Benny Parl and a few of them down here. They're killing it, doing some you know, big long trips, you know, pushing into a lot of backcountry and pulling out some big numbers and really nice heads as well. So if I can make a spare weekend this weekend, I'll be definitely going up and going for a look with them, yeah.
I was going to say, you're going to go to the Deer Expo, but you're probably a bit far away from that.
No, well, I heard you do the intro. It's actually Lardner Park in Warragul this year, which is only 60 minutes down the road from us, I think. So, yeah, if I can get away for half a day, I might sneak down there with Loz and have a bit of a chin wag and catch up with a few blokes more than anything and have a look around, yeah.
It's a terribly timed weekend. What, Mother's Day? I just don't really understand that.
And they probably should just have it in summer when everyone's not hunting.
So, that too. There's a few question marks around it. I was listening to Endless Pursuit and they said the same thing. It's just bizarre at timing. It just doesn't make sense. So anyway, that's not for our decision, so it's all good. So mate, with the pointers, can you use them on ducks or anything, or you just use those on?
No, 100%. We mix it up a little bit. I'm not much of a duck shooter. I think first time I went down the swamp, we took a six pack of cans and one gun between two blokes, but we did have two dogs. They went all right. And then, I just went down with my brother-in-law, Bobby Marshall, and another gent by the name of John Nielsen. They've got a beautiful property down Beng Warden Way. We took a few dogs down. And, the Labradors obviously cream it. They do it every day of the week. Not every day of the week, but that's their thing. You know, they're out every day of the season getting it done. But, I took Clinker down, and he somehow managed to fall out of the hide and managed to retrieve. He'd never done it before, even if a Labrador did swim out halfway and steal it out of his mouth. Not to worry, but no, they do fantastic. I got little Blazy and Cinder in there. They're both primarily bird lines, which I like to sort of breed into these deer hunting dogs. It sort of slows them down, and the point, the nice flat back, the tail coming up, that real solid indication when something's there, I think comes a lot from that bird line. Like, they were essentially, way back in the day, were a bird dog, like a bigger sort of bird dogs. So, we try and use them for it a little bit, but, not a whole lot, mate. But they will get it done if you wanted to train it into them, no worries.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's I love the look of them. They just look so cool. Like, I just love looking at your pictures. Like,
you're probably used to them big mastiff things too, I suppose, up there with the pigs
I've always had little dogs, mate. I'm not a big dog person. I've always had something small, Catahoula crosses that are quite small. Yep. Kelpie crosses, which are quite small. So I've always had nothing over 30 kilos. I'd rather have six of the little things chucked in the back of the coat.
Gets a lot easier, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather, where we hunt, it can get quite hot. And you take out the big mastiffs and they only last 10 minutes.
Yeah, cook them pretty quick, It was much the same in Darwin. We got caught out a few times after night shifts trying to hunt of a morning just as soon as you knock off work. And the heat'd get you before you got to the pig sort of thing. And, we had some pretty big days carrying dogs back to cars, and I know what you mean.
Yeah, no, back in the day when the old boy used to box pigs, we used to have luggers because you needed that safe grab on the ear, stick it properly, and then it was human consumption. So we couldn't really have balers because a lot of our dogs are bull biters. So
wouldn't make the books.
So sit the pig down, walk in and shoot it. It's pretty much these days. My brother's got a team going up in Cape York at the moment. They're doing pretty well. So
The
bigger dogs just don't suit anymore for us. We don't like vet bills, and we're all too fat and slow to get there. So we'd rather.
What are they? Just sort of Kelpie Catahoulas cross sort of stuff.
We've moved away from the Catahoulas, but we've basically stuck with the Kelpies. I've just ordered two Border Collies. Short hair Collies. I've got a few mates who've got them, and they run cattle. It's just brains for me at the moment. Brains and speed. And
beauty.
And I'm basically going to use those Border Collies as a helping hand with the YouTube channel. So I've got some kind of, I can tell a story with the dogs, basically.
Yep,
they're pups. They're only 10 weeks old at the moment. So if we're going to get the dogs in there, film them basically all the way through, and you can watch their journey, basically. So that's kind of something I was thinking of doing.
Beautiful. Yep. Yeah. I'll just keep an eye out.
Yeah, something a bit different. I've got a mate who's a dog trainer, so we're going to run through some drills. I've been watching a lot of Clark McGee. You ever watch him on Facebook, on YouTube? It's just amazing.
I did have him on Facebook. Yeah, I haven't come across him on YouTube, but I know the gent you mean.
So he owns Ridge. I think, don't quote me. He owns Ridge. He owns He's basically a dog trapper, and he owns a deer management system, which is, I think it's called Ridge. And it's all about, you know, deer management and basically training people the right way and sustainabilities. And he's got a YouTube channel there, and he's done a lot with I can't remember the guy. He's a Victorian. He's had a hunting channel on Austar. Rob Flickling. So he knows Rob Flickling. He comes on the channel a little bit, and they've done a bit on TV together. And Clive McGee's just got these border collies, and they're just amazing. Obviously, he spends every day with them dog trapping, and it's just the way that they work. It's just I can't get over it, and that's why I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated with your point is because, you know, you obviously work with them so closely, and Clark is well renowned for his dog training and everything. So it was just fascinating to watch it, and I've kind of just thought, well, I'm going to try the border collies.
Ripper.
Give one a go. So, mate, I got a couple of questions from some Instagram followers of yours.
Yeah, mate. Sure.
I got one from Cody Gearon, who's been on the show before. What's your choice of caliber for Samba?
I always shot a 30-06. Never ever had a drama. 165 Sierra Boat Tails. Beautiful gun. Shot 300 meters, no worries, every day of the week. No adjustable turrets, none of the fancy scopes, anything like that. Yep. But then I met Loz, and I married her, and I bought her a 30-06, took the stock off, painted it pink, put it back on for her, put a nice scope on it, and gave it to her for her birthday. And it was the first time we went out. I thought, shit, I better buy a bigger rifle. Because she's shooting an 06 now as well. So I shoot a 300 Win Mag now. It's been fantastic. It's just a teaker. It gets knocked around every time I go out, cleaned occasionally. It's never missed a beat. It's always shot straight. The dog's always there to back us up regardless. We just got to sort of get a shot in there somewhere, and then the dogs will sort of get it done. And then we, you know, try and obviously look after the animals humanely as possible. So try and make the shot count initially, and then, you know, get it done once the dogs pulled her up. But yeah, it's been fantastic. I'm heading over to the west coast of New Zealand hunting tar on Tuesday or Wednesday. I think we got 7 days in the bush, weather permitting. We're spike camping out of a chopper. That 300's coming over. I'm a bit reluctant to take the scope off and put something with adjustable turrets on it, though. We are shooting a long way, but it's been so good to me that I don't want to touch it. So we'll see. I might take it over and just see if I can get in a bit closer and, you know, keep it as old faithful and get it done. But I'll probably be kicking myself if I get over there and it fogs up and I can't shoot far enough as well. So I'm in two minds at the moment. Yeah.
I understand that. I've got a, on my Kimber 308, I've got a Picanary, and Gary from Browns Plains Firearms has helped me out, and he's done exactly what I wanted him to do. And obviously whatever I've done is wrong. So I can take the scope off and put the thermal on, vice versa, and I've had it all marked out, and I've gone for my first state forest hunt the other week, drove 8 hours all through the night, got there first morning, see a deer, lined him up, and I just totally missed it. I know I'm not being cocky, but it's something I should not miss.
You shot it since, or
I've sighted it in again, and it's been bumped. So
yeah,
I'm going back to Browns Plains to get some solid rings, and I won't be putting the I'm selling the thermal, so I won't be putting it.
Yeah.
It made me cry just the you know, taking the scope off and on. And I thought this will be fine. It'll be nice and tight and everything. Nah, I just So I'd stick to Old Faithful. I wouldn't be changing Old Faithful around too much.
I think you'll find a lot of blokes have got them. Yeah, they're, you know, why fix it if it ain't broke sort of thing, you know. So, yeah.
My old boy used to be a roost shooter, and he was very particular. Don't touch the gun. Don't do this. And, you know, there was a reason for it, because it was dimed in to why he liked it, and it was perfect for him. So, I'm probably going to have to start being a bit more like that. So, all right, mate, next question. This one's from Leslie. Lannis is Security Doors. So I don't know. Probably you know him. Rob's dog seems to be point chase and bail a deer. How does he stop them from chasing all the time? I have no idea what they mean by that, but
yeah, they don't necessarily bail. They will if I don't command them not to, and they do, you know, bump something out of the bed, or they do sort of have that initial chase or bit of leg. It depends on what it is. If I've seen it get up and go, a lot of the footage we sort of have got going on there, I'm sort of let them have a bit of a stretch, go for a bit of a run, especially if it's, you know, near and on that midday and we're sort of getting back towards camp or lower country where you're not expecting to have a bigger stag sort of perched up in the breach of one of them gullies sort of things. But, I sort of goes back to the, or answering the question, it sort of goes back to that, that 1-2-3 formula I've actually got one just here. I was only just charging it ready to take to New Zealand. With the Garmin Alphas, they got a series of buttons on them. And these new 200 eyes, they're fantastic. You don't even have to get them out of your pocket to use them. You can, you know, literally have them sitting on your pack in your pouch or your pocket or your zip or whatever you have, and you don't even have to move it to use the buttons. But we have the collars tuned in. One second.
Yeah.
We have these collars tuned in. These are a TT15 collar. We get all our gear from Gadgie at H&S Firearms in Sale here. He's fantastic. Him and the boys, they look after us. You know, we're sort of in and out primarily at the start of every season, getting the gear in check and a new collar or what have you. And we set these up basically so that we run the small prongs. So they're not, I don't know if you can see it. Yeah. It's a bit hard with a podcast when you're only listening as well. But they come with long prongs and small prongs. The longer prongs, which are your shock barbs, they're generally for like your hairier dogs, you know, your stag hounds and bits and pieces, whereas your short prongs, they're fine on your smoother dogs. We set them up so that they're on a very minute shock. It doesn't need to hurt the dog. It just needs to make the dog think, so to speak. Yeah. The 1-2-3 formula I'll sort of keep referring to is one is the vibrate. So the dog feels the vibrate on its neck in the collar. Two is the beep, hears it. So another way to get him to switch on. Three is the shock. We find getting our dogs to stop and recall, we never need to use the shock once you've used that formula, so to speak, if that makes any sense. The vibrate will generally pull them up. The recall being the beep, it might be one, two or three times, but they will generally come back even if you've got a stag bedded just there. If they don't want to break and they are locked on, you'll generally know that dog of mine, whether it be Clinker or Sooty or even a mate of mine, a good mate I hunt with, Geno, he's got Boss and was our genetics, our lines as well. They're the same. They just don't break. They'll sit there a point until you get up there and sort of see what's going on. It is insurance as well, just being able to get them to come back in case they are, you know, you can see the critter, you don't want to shoot, you know what it is, what have you, but yeah, you don't want them sort of pointing, indicating, ready to break or chase when you can't get there either, you know, whether it be cresting a hill or, you know, walking down a thick gully that you can't see or even just around the bottom of a creek when he's just on the bend and you can't see or something like that. So that insurance or that having that handpiece there and being able to call them back without having to make noise or, you know, yell, speak, whistle, whatever it be. If the dog's not looking, hand signals are a great one, but if the dog's not looking, again, it's not going to work. So it works. They work quite well, yeah.
And obviously the people who are watching can realise that is some thick country.
It's definitely not looking forward to hunting some of that stuff this year. I've already heard from some of the boys that have been up there that it's almost impenetrable now. So we'll probably be, jumping in the truck and going to check a few old spots and even find some new ones again. So always moving around and, keeping the ball rolling sort of thing, seeing what we can come up with each year. Every season's new to us. So, we don't do every spot over and over. We keep moving. So,
Might be time for another fire, to clear it out again.
I think so, We'll see. We're meant to be back in a drought in a year or two. So, we'll see.
All right. I have to admit, I've used your system before. I like that. I did exactly the same thing when I had my dogs. The vibrate. I didn't have a beep. I just needed to vibrate. That's all I ever needed.
Just to break that concentration, just to break that what they're doing and get them to think. Yeah, yep, exactly.
Well, it's amazing, something like that. Dogs are obviously instinctive and they'll you know, cane on the target. And sometimes it's just such a great way for training. You know, people can understand you're not hurting them at all. You know, and by the time, the second they see that on, I actually used to have a dog where I used to just put a little box on him, thinking that he thought he had it on the whole time. And it would just psychologically, you know, I was always on top of him because I put that little box on him, thinking that, you know, he's going to get shocked if he does the wrong thing. And I would just say, he just knew straight away. And I was just like, hey, how? Yeah, if he mucked around, obviously he got a little bit of a vibrate, and straight away, I don't want the next step.
Because they know, mate. Ours lose it as soon as they hear that. You know, as soon as they hear that noise, that's it. They're on. Tails are out. They're at the pen. They're at the truck. They're waiting to get in the box. Even of a morning in camp, you get up. That you got to let the dog out before you move the tails. Before you move the collars in the ute. Otherwise, the tail's going in the crate on the car and scaring everything off. So yeah, they know what's up anyway.
Yeah, they're pretty smart. We kind of just answered it, but we'll do this again anyway. So Julia Labasco's question is, Rob's process in training up young pointers to become his companion in the hill. So the question was, Rob's process in training up a young pointers to become his companion in the hill. So what do you do to get What do you do to get your dogs going, basically, from a pup?
I start them in the backpack. So not every one of them, but me males, they'll come in the backpack. A lot of people, they're like, you know, there's a few different mobs out there with a few different training regimes that I don't necessarily disagree with. I just think you should have that dog with you. Well, there it is. Young dog in the pack. But you should have that dog with you pretty young, because I get a lot of gents ask me, can I hold the dog longer, train it for 6 months, 12 months, and then I'll pick it up? Well, that for me, that's a killer. You want that dog, like that companionship, you want it from the start. That is, you know, 90% of your training with your dog is bond. It's join up. You want them with you in the bush, you know, as soon as you're in there, obviously not overexerting them with their little growing bodies and their bones aren't even joined yet. They're still growing. You don't really want to overexert them to sort of that 12, 18 month mark till you really get them going. But I just like to have them with me, have them, you know, being out and about. Like, obviously, I'll try and have all, you know, 3 immunizations up to date, sort of that 12, 16 week mark before they're exposed to what could possibly be on hair of an old Samba stag. But I just want to have them there, exposed, the smell, you know, get them confident, have them out of the pack when we, you know, we might shoot one and be just on cut up and stuff, have them there, have them excited and keen and sniffing around. And, you know, they're in the pack, you'll sit them down. If you have to move off to take the shot or what have you, so be it. Pick the dog back up, you know, go over to the deer, or even go to the deer, get it done, come back, get the dog. Like, you can see that little pup there in the photo. He's that's Clinker when he was a little baby. He's 9 or 10 weeks there, I think. He's got the collar on him just for this fact, in case I have to put the pack down when I have got it done with the other dog, to come back and pick me pack up, sort of thing. So I don't want to lose my dog when he crawls out and walks off in the bush. So yeah, it might look a bit funny, but it is a precautionary measure as well. So, yeah, it's just have them with you. Obviously, don't overexert them, and keep an eye on the little buggers too, you know. It doesn't take much for a little pup to run into mischief nowadays. Like, you could have fallen down that rock there, or, you know, walked off, got bit by a snake, anything. So, but, yeah, you just got to look after them, basically.
That's an Instagram model right back there. He's a model.
Yeah, too right, little bugger.
He's very cute. All right. So we're doing well with these questions. So I'm flying through them. There's another one here. We've got that one. Chase all the time. Yeah, Rob. Sorry. How does Rob aim to use his dog's deer hunting? Their purpose is to find him a deer when hunting, or just to locate? Okay. Yeah, it's a weird question. Basically, we've answered that already, saying we find the deer. The dogs do locate the deer beforehand.
Yeah, too right. Sort of follow them up. You've got to have them where the deer are. They're not just going to walk off the highway and find your Samba stag. It'd be nice if it was that easy, but yeah, they'll just basically put them on the scent and not necessarily just follow them up. You know, we're obviously putting them where the deer are going to be too, but it's being able to read your dog as well, which comes back to that, having them in the bush as young as you can and just learning with them. It's all part of the process, that join up. So, yeah.
I've got three questions left, mate, and then we'll call it quits. We've already hit the 45 minutes. It's gone very quickly. I've just had a Facebook question. Ever lost a dog to a snake bike? How do you train to avoid snakes?
Snoopy, the best I ever had, lost a bike snake. Being a grub, I decided to work in overtime one morning instead of going hunting. It was actually going to be a bit too warm anyway, and just before I left for work, I was at the in-laws at the time. Loz and I hadn't quite moved to the farm we're on now, and I had some makeshift pens down the back. They were good pens, but as it turns out, there might have been a tiger snake floating around, and he was barking that morning I was leaving, and I actually wondered to myself what he was barking at. He never barks in the pen, and I jumped in the truck and went to work, and 3 hours later, Loz rang me hysterical, and yeah, Snoopy was in the pen, laying down with the vial out of his mouth and bits and pieces, all the common signs, and yeah, that was it for him. So I was very fortunate in the sense that I don't usually sire my dogs. We keep all our breeding and genetics and everything well in house nowadays, so that we know where they're going and what's happening with them. And we happened to about 6 months prior, we happened to sire him over a good mate's bitch, and he gave pick of the litter to a particular gent. That bloke started driving trucks interstate. So he sort of went back to the breeder, to my mate, and said, have you got anyone that might want him? And that someone happened to be me at the time when the mate rang up and said, do I want a dog? I said, no, it's too soon. And he told me what dog it was. And so I jumped on it, and it took 3 or 4 months to really start to gel with each other. And now he's my best dog's father. We've still got him here. And we've got the direct line still. So very fortunate, but we'll never be down to one male again, because I don't want to be that close to ever losing the line like we nearly did. So yeah, good question.
Yeah. No, it's snakes, pain in the ass, and I'm sorry that happened to you, mate. And I'm glad you end up getting a good result with your dogs these days. So
yeah,
sorry that happened to you. We've all of a sudden got a few questions pop through. So here's Raf. We've had Raf from Duck Hunting Australia and Quail before. Will you ever get a liver GSP, or you only run black one?
Yeah, I don't know. Once you go black, you never go back, kind of thing, I guess. But I do love me liver ones. That Raf's got some absolute corkers as well. So, yeah, g'day, Raf. Good on you, buddy. But I think I'll stick with the black for now, bud.
No, it'd be hard. Once you go one colour, you probably want to stay. Interesting. I've got three more questions. They're all popping up here, so I'll keep going. JGV Deer Hunter. Hi, Rob. Use your system great. Important for people to know in Victoria that Andrew's government want to ban these lifestyle collars. James V. Yeah, it's you do cop a bit of an interesting government, don't you, with old Andrew down there? So, at least you guys can hunt state forest. Us Queenslanders can't even do that. So,
it's hard, mate. We'll live it up while we can. We've always got to come at us from every angle. That's where we all got to band together, duck hunters, hound hunters, stalkers, dog hunters alike. We've just got to stick together and push back. And it's hard. Like I said a bit earlier before we got going, I sort of try to steer clear of the politics of it. I do it as a hobby, and it's been an addiction since a young bloke. I don't want to, get into too much of it that sort of takes the fun out of it. But that being said, I want it to be around forever for our kids and their kids as well. So, we just got to stick together, I suppose.
That's it. And that's kind of why I do the whole the spiel at the start, the Deer Expo. That's important, because that's, more knowledge for people to fight back. The Honey Connection podcast, the Send It podcast, and the Endless Pursuit podcast. They all vouch for that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah, you got to get around it, yeah.
That's it. You don't have to push it. I don't push that stuff, because it's, to be honest, I'm not the smartest kettle, but I'll always have a crack, and I always write petitions, and thanks to these guys who make these shirts, Dan, who's been on a few podcasts, that's what they do. They write petitions for you. So name's eluding me right now. I can't remember. It'll come to me in a second. Eureka Tactical. So Eureka Tactical actually write it for you. basically. They have everything there set up. All you got to do is ask Dan and help you out. So, if you want to stop tropicals, all that kind of stuff, I'm sure he can help you out with a way of riding, and he can basically do it all for you. Oh, here we go. We've got another question. Who manage your heads, mate? Because that wall behind you is fascinating. So
that's a good one. They're actually all the old boys. He's a taxidermist when he's not operating machines or fitting or welding or whatever else he's getting up to. But yeah, Dad and I mount them all. So yeah, he's done a few bits and pieces over the years for me. He likes me to get in the shed with him now. It's a bit of time for us to get together and sort of bond, I guess. But it's sort of been a few years since we've done any. I've got a bit of a backlog there that we really need to get in and start working through a few. So yeah, he does a fantastic job. If you're in the sort of Gippsland region, look him up. He's Lambourne Taxidermy, so yeah, he'll look after you.
Yeah, mate, that's some beautiful stags behind you there. It's just fascinating. All the questions are popping in now. So Apex Fox Whistles, Rob's thoughts on English pointers for Samba.
Never really had one. They're obviously working quite well. There's a few mobs out there doing them. They're very good, close indicating style dog. I guess they probably probably comes down to your training, like any dog, I suppose. But yeah, they're bigger, sort of nice breed. Like some of them, white and tan, you'd almost call it. Like the liver whites, they get some pretty cool colours. They're almost red, some of them, and yeah, even your blacks as well. I reckon they're fantastic. I know a bloke I know that does a lot of professional culling and stuff. He's got one that he'll use even overnight as a follow up dog, and yeah, it seems to do just fine. So yeah, I reckon go for it.
Beauty. Loving these questions, people. Whoever's everyone's sending them through. Thank you for the questions. If you've got questions, this is the time, because I've only got two questions on my phone left for Rob. So I've got another one from Apex Fox Whistles. What's your diet? Tell us a bit about the diet, mate. What do your dogs eat? How much?
Pretty much we feed a lot of game on. If you're talking kibble, we don't feed any wet canned food, any of that sort of business. We feed game on, and then we're just big on venison, chicken mince, different bits and pieces like that. They'll have red meat at least once a week. Come the season when they're hunting, they'll get red meat two or three times a week. It's generally always venison. We try not to feed anything but that. I'm sort of a bit of a, you know, old school advocate for, you know, they'll sort of chase what you feed them, especially with the skin on. I remember I had a pointer that never ever chased a cow in her life. I fed her a little bit of beef leg with skin on, and she chased a cow about 2-3 days later. So we're on a farm here, so I don't have any dramas with that with the beefies anyway. But yeah, always just feed them venison. So pretty much frozen too, comes out of the freezer to them. Feed it to them too fresh. I reckon it goes straight through them. That's probably not as good for them. So yeah.
Great question from both questions from Apex Fox Whistles. Thank you, Apex Fox Whistles. Keel, we've already mentioned that we do use Rob uses the tracking collars to do that at the same time, so it's two birds, one stone.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be them TT15s with the beep vibrate shock either. You can go the T5s that doesn't have the shock, which are just as effective, depending on what you want to do too. So yeah.
No, beautiful. And Matt's a long time. Great questions from Matt always. What's your favourite deer to eat, mate?
We don't get enough of it. Hog deer every day of the week.
Oh wow! Okay,
love it. Yep. You can't beat a 3/4 grown Samba that's done the right way, hung for long enough. But them hoggies, they're fantastic.
Yep. I've only ever tried fallow, chital, and red, and I'll have to come up one day and try the Samba and What's hog deer like? Is just because they're a lot smaller, aren't they?
Small. I don't know. Cut it thin, sear it each side. It just seems to eat so well. Don't even need to be hung for long. It's pretty much exactly the same as far as texture and bits and pieces go. It just has that, I don't know, tastes a little bit less gamey, I guess. Yeah. But you put the right sauce on any deer, it tastes good.
I found red deer very in the Queensland, the Brisbane Valley deer. And I think, yeah, we were shooting stags at the time, so it probably was that. But yeah, they're very, very, very gamey. We'd cut it thin, do it in butter and salt and pepper, and it was you know, we could still eat it, and we still did.
Yeah.
Just very gamey. So
yeah.
I think I got a lot to learn with me skills of cooking deer. So I kind of why
keep it cold, hang it as long as you can, and get the skin off as quick as you can too. I think helps. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Do they have glands like pigs, mate? Like, you know how pigs got glands in their arms?
Not really. It's probably more your fat. You can even trim a lot of that off as well. You speak to the right butcher, you probably would have different bits and pieces of glands down along the legs there somewhere or something, but not to my knowledge, mate. Yeah.
Fair enough. I've probably spoken too soon. All these questions have come through. have you ever had a fail with the deer hearing the beep, the dog hearing the beep of the collar?
I've definitely had them stamp their feet when the dog's close. I actually, a lot of the footage and photos and that I sent you yesterday and today, it was just off the phone I had. I actually backed it up to this laptop, which it's all on here. So I had a lot more. I probably would have been really good for you to have right now, but okay. I have had them stomp and honk because the dog's so close, you know, 4 or 5 meters off the deer, just on lock point, and they're stomping at him, and I'm trying to recall it because I don't want him to break or to put these does up, doe and a fawn it was this particular time, and they can hear the beep. So they're looking at him, not knowing what it is, and every time I'd beep him to recall, they'd stomp and honk, and yeah, it's quite an hurrah for a while, but yeah, they definitely want to know what it is, but yeah, I guess, you know, they're just inquisitive as well. They're looking and scent, you know, smelling, and their ears are going, and yeah, they're just trying to work out what it is, what the noise is. So yeah, they're not too worried. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Do you ever run more than one dog on a hunt? Do you find it to make them compete with each other? And from a young age, have you encouraged?
We tend to always try to run. Oh, sorry, mate, you're still reading the question. Loz just.
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I'll just read that question. Do you ever run one more when it makes it complete with each other? And from a young age, are you encouraging your pups to point or bail, chase, or both? Basically, indicate being point. Yeah, we call it indicate because it might not necessarily always be a point. It could just be a dead stop in the bush. And the brush could be that thick you can't see his leg lift. It could be a tail up in the air. It could be the dog could be facing one way and his head completely 90-degree turns, just looking between trees or something like. It's not always a point. Like, they're obviously called German Shorthair pointers for a reason because that's primarily what they do, especially in the paddock on quail and birds and, you know, alike. But we generally try and train them with scent, like a little bit of sambar skin or something like that around here to start with, maybe even on a fishing rod. A lot of blokes are really big on that sort of stuff. That's probably more your bird dog side of things. But we generally just sort of try and keep them as close as we can, you know, just so that we can see what the dog's doing, because it might not always be that dead set, you know, straight point with its tail in the air, so to speak. You just really want to be able to see in case he's doing something a little bit out of the ordinary or different. So, yeah.
I see you changed your beard to something a bit more prettier and fluffier, mate.
Oh, I have, yeah. Loz just delivered me this little girl. So I'll try and hold her up there for you. This is black bitch that we have, excuse the French. We got a litter on the deck at the moment out in the shed. So they're a litter of seven out there that are all going to some beautiful, beautiful little homes across Australia. We've got a couple over South Australia and a few local ones as well. Last litter, we had a few down to Tassie and Western Australia and Northern Territory. So they do go sort of all over the place, but we're generally always selling to outdoorsy sort of people, you know, especially the hunters that are going to utilize the genetics that we've been putting into them over the years. So, yeah.
That's awesome, mate. Well done on the, genetics is one thing that's very hard to do and get the right lines. And, you know, especially when you're from the questions alone and the amount of people that commented, you're obviously well known for your dog breeding and your knowledge. So congratulations to them. How many litters do you have a year?
One. We have had years where we've had two bitches going at the same time and had two. Just by chance. I think that's happened once when we had Cinder and Ash going at the same time. Ash has finished up. This is Cinder's last litter. We generally only do three out of a dog. You can push them a bit harder. Cinder's just finished up at four, but she only had one dog in her second litter, which was Clinker. Like, we weren't keeping a dog at the time, but when she only had one and that little pup got everything that possibly could have out of both parents, we were sort of would have been mad not to keep it, and he's turned out to be an absolute cracker. So, Yeah, but generally one a year. This will be our last one for a good 12 months or so, about 12 months, I'd say. We got little Blazy out there. She's got some really nice bird lines in her. Her parents from 16, 17, 18 were bird trial champions. So she's going to bring some really nice indicating sort of style dog to the mix, I think. Yeah, so she's quite a big dog too. A little bit narrower in the face than what we're used to, but really big, tall, broad sort of dog. So it'd be a really good running dog, I think. Yeah.
Do you only keep males, mate, or do you have females as well? Like, obviously,
I prefer to hunt over males just because they're that little bit harder. They tend to have a bit more drive, want to go all day, but they do knock up quicker, if that makes sense. Like, you might get to the next morning, and we've got some pretty good facilities up the high country where we can swap dogs out. So I might take two. A mate of mine, Jenna, I mentioned before, he might take two. And then if we do have a dog knock up, we'll just swap them out. They'll be in the pen in the straw for the day, and we'll grab another one, and, yeah, away we'll go. So, but generally, we hunt the boys, but when now that Cinder's finishing up with her pup, she used to be a phenomenal little deer dog. So she'll get her operation to be de-sexed now, and a little bit of a booby tuck, and she'll be out on the ground hunting towards the end of the season as well. So I'm really looking forward to having her back.
Do you mind me asking how much for a pup?
Well, it sort of fluctuates. This one that I want to keep, that could be quite expensive. But yeah, they're sort of upwards at 2,500 to 3,500. Yeah, which we think's pretty fair. Yeah, yeah.
Now that's normal these days. That's the normal especially for pure breeds and Breno's outdoors. How long do you hang your deer for?
Thank you, Breno. Cool room, sort of 4 to 5 days generally. If it's just cooler weather up the bush, maybe a day or two, then come home for cut up, depending on what the temperature's like when it's on the truck on the way home. But if we're getting it in the cool room within hours, yeah, sometimes 4, 5, 6, 7 days sort of thing. Just sort of keeping an eye on it. We cut the skin off when the outside skin starts to go black. That's generally, when it really blackens off, it gets a bit of a bark on it, so to speak. That's generally time to cut it up. Yeah. Yeah. But everyone does it different. That just seems to work for us. So,
it's proof in the pudding, it works. So,
yeah.
How do your dogs react to wombats and wallabies and any other natives in the bush?
They are fine with absolutely everything except for echidnas. I don't know what it is with pointers and echidnas. They just love them. They just will go, and they don't necessarily bark at them and that, though, but when I can hear a bit of scourging and stuff going in the bush when I'm close enough or walking past, I know what it's going to be every time. So, yeah, I've never really had any dramas with them with, rabbits, wallabies, foxes, any of that sort of stuff, just echidnas. They must love them spikes.
I've had a few echidna run-ins. It's very interesting there. Yeah, I've been told they smell very similar to pigs, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So I don't go and touch them. I just call them off and we'll keep moving. So
yeah.
I apologise, Rob. We're getting so many questions coming through. So
you're up, mate. I've got half a beer left, mate, so keep them coming.
What's the age of the youngest dog you've successfully shot a deer?
That's a good one. Blinker. We shot six stags in one way or another off Clinker before he was 6 months old. So I think he would have been he must have been about 4.5, 5 months old. There was two good weekends there in the mix that would have been made up for 4 or 5. So, but that's just, getting in close, out of the pack, letting him go forward, and it's there, and then he sort of does his thing. Righto, he's looking there it is sort of thing. So, yeah, awesome. just that, not overexerting them, letting them run all day and chase one pasture, so to speak. Just, I may well have shot 90% of those five of the six stags without him, because I sort of knew they were there anyway. But, yeah, he was doing the right thing, so that was sort of all part of the training, I guess. So, yeah.
That's awesome, mate. Love that. It's awesome. How many hounds do you have in your yard at one time, and how do you go about keeping your own pup?
Four or five dogs we have at one time. Generally float around that sort of four mark. This little bugger might make it five. I'm very reluctant to give this one up. She's absolutely beautiful, really forward little smart dog. So, and how do you go about picking your own pup? That's a really good question. You probably want to always look inside the mouth for one, make sure they haven't got an overbite or an underbite. They've got a nice little square lined up jaw. Even though they're puppy teeth and they want to lose them, you want to make sure they've got all their teeth, just to be sure that they're not going to have dramas later on. Like they could have a snap tooth or could grow out wrong. They could have a gum infection, any of the sorts. Like, yeah, look at everything. Look at ears, both of them. Look at eyes. Just make sure everything looks right. Look for hernias under the tummy. Is a really good spot to sort of find them, just above the belly button, so to speak. And just your big one is legs. You want to make sure they're not turned in or they haven't got. It's a bit hard to show you there, but they haven't got like a bend outward or inward in their legs, especially inward, and their little legs turn out. That sort of could grow out to be a bit of an ordinary dog if they've got turned out front legs and things. Then make sure they've been vet checked. A lot of people ask about papers and things. Papers is a hard one. There's a lot of people out there. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. There is a few people out there that are peddling unpapered dogs under papered banners. Just because you're buying a papered dog doesn't necessarily mean you're getting the be-all and end-all of a pup. Have a look yourself. Make sure it's vet checked. Don't take their word for it. Yeah. But that being said, there is some fantastic papered breeders out there as well. So just make sure you're doing your homework and, have a good look at your pup when you're picking it. Obviously, the more pups in the litter, the more pups you'll have to pick from, but you could have more dramas as well, the likes of heart murmurs and stuff from pups growing too quick or too slow. But, yeah, just really have a good look. And if you're worried, get a second opinion. Have the pup vet checked yourself.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, very good knowledge there and very good. Definitely agree with everything you say there. So, ever had a gun shy dog? And can you reverse that problem?
I definitely believe you can. I did have one in Darwin, unbeknown to us. One of the dogs that we flew up, actually two of the dogs that we flew up were nearly 6 months old. They'd come from a breeder that took one of the dogs back and I think had another one he kept on himself. Ray and a mate of mine, Ray, we grabbed both them dogs, flew them up. His was fantastic. It turns out mine was gun shy. We were actually hunting geese in the swamps down at, I think they call it calfskin billabong out on Gunpoint Road at Northern Territory there. Yeah. And we did a little bit of shooting and bits and pieces and went back to the car for a beer. And then I realized, where's my dog? I walked back into where we come from, couldn't find her. Went back to the truck. The boys are running out of beers. They want to head home. I had my own vehicle. I said, well, you just head off. I'll keep looking for my dog. And just before they were about to leave, I looked at my ute and it shaked. And at the time, I wasn't sure what it was. I went and had a look up under there, and it was my dog. She'd run off when we'd fired the last few shots, got gunshy, and jumped up under the truck and crawled up in under the spare tyre, or on top of the spare tyre. So yeah. Probably lucky I found her there before I drove off. But she was ridiculously gunshy. It was unbeknown to me at the time, being a bit older dog. I guess I didn't really think of it. But we got her home and just sort of made one of them clappers. I don't know if you've seen one of them. They're like a little bit of piano hinge or a bit of hinge with a couple of bits of 4B2 about, 300 mil long, and just clap it together around them and, yep, get them used to it. But if you're sort of getting to the point where if you feel like you're scaring the dog more so than getting any leeway with it, another really good way to do it is preoccupy them while you're doing it. One way we really used to introduce a lot of little pups to it when we were up at the old farm was we would have a clay shoot out the back and slowly bring the pups closer and closer, but preoccupy them in the sense that play with balls or something while they're doing it, or just pat them and play with them and roll them over them and, rough them up and just really preoccupy them so they're not even, they're not really noticing the shots in the background, and before long it'll just become second nature to them.
Great answer there, mate. And I totally agree with everything you just said there. It's a great one. I've got two more questions. Stephen Hoare has also commented on Instagram. So sorry, Stephen. I was getting to you. You're my last two questions. Mate, tell us about the biggest Sambia you shot.
Stevie Hoare, before I get into this question, I just want to say a quick condolence, mate. He had a pup out of me from last litter, and she was an absolute little beauty. Best of mates, great with his kids. And some bad circumstances come about there the last few days, and he lost her to, actually think it might have been to a snake bite. They were out cutting wood, and sort of got a bit of a message off him the other day about it, and it's a bit of a shake up, and It just goes to show you never know how long you got the little buggers for. But yeah, good on you, Steve. But yeah, mate, the biggest one's still out there. I'm still looking for him. So every time I go out and head up there, I'm still looking for him. But yeah, there is one up on the wall that he went 206 DS. So he's about 30 and a half by 30 inches spread, I think. So he's beautiful head. I'm sort of looking at him up there now. I'll try and pop this putt down and pan this phone around and try and sorry, a bit going on with this little one.
You're right.
To show you, but
what a room! What a room! Wow.
That's I'm trying to hold it there. Yeah, that's him there near the speaker. So a bit hard with the phone. Sorry, but
no, yeah. We can see clearly. It's all good.
Yeah,
beautiful.
But no, he's still yet to be beat. I shot that when I was about 21 years old. I'm a year off 40. So I'm trying. We'll get there eventually.
No, lovely. And I got one more question. Stephen asked, and condolences, Steve, to your pup, mate. Sorry to hear about that. Last question from Stephen was, when are you starting YouTube channel, mate?
Well, I don't know if you've seen me few little clips that I've already got on Insta, but I think I'm quite cut out for the camera. I think I'll leave that to TG, to Tony Gillihan, mate. He's a man. There's blokes out there that are just natural. So I'll sit behind the gun and behind the camera, but yeah, I'll let the professionals do the stuff in front.
Mate, when you start involving cameras and dogs and guns, it's just impossible to. I don't know how Tony does it so well.
No, you got to give it to him, don't you?
Yeah. I've actually for my channel, I'm getting one of my mates who's fascinated about videography, so he wants to do the filming from now on. I said, that's fine.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I don't have to do it. That's fine by me. So he wants to do that while I deal with the dogs. So
laughing.
Not going to say no. Mate, I got a couple of little questions here. I don't know what cuppy means, but I think he's probably saying puppy.
I think we'll leave that one. That's probably one for me, brother. Good on you, Jack.
And Matt saying, show off. Well, Matt, if I had a room like that, I'd be showing it off too. So I'm not gonna... Mate, we're going to wrap it up because that's – I apologise. I did say 45 minutes to you, and we've gone over the hour point.
You're right, bud. No worries. I appreciate you having me. And keep doing what you're doing, mate. We've been chatting now for a few years, and you just seem to get better and better. You've moved ahead in leaps and bounds and doing good things, especially for the hunting community as a whole and getting everyone together. And, you know, it's a good sort of good platform and level that you're getting everything across. So, no, good on you, Lawson. Appreciate it, mate.
No, thank you, mate. And good luck for your tar hunt. I'm actually over there in a couple of weeks as well, but I think my hunt's been cancelled due to illness, sadly. Not for me. It's still 50-50 at the moment, but... yeah, appreciate the kind words, mate, and good luck for your tar hunt. Hope you and your missus get a big fella. Really appreciate you coming on, mate. Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for having me. Cheers. Good on you, everyone. Cheers.
All good, mate. Just going to run a few ads before we go, guys. So I've got three ads to run. We're just too busy going on with the questions with Rob. And, thank you for everyone tuning in. This will be on podcast tomorrow, and so thanks for watching. And of course, they never want to work when I want them to work. So thank you, everyone, for watching. Have a good night.